still on a theme of going through the Old Testament, some of the Old Testament books. I wasn't sure how long this would last when I first started, but it seemed like when I get down to the office on Monday or Tuesday, I think, oh, there's another book I'd like to give a little summary in. And so tonight we're going to look at the book of Esther. You have the summary. I'm not going to read this book, 10 chapters. Maybe one of the smaller books that we've done. Well, let's take a look at the book. It's interesting because the word God, you know, never appears in the book of Esther. But God's influence leaks out in many of the situations that are found. Not necessarily a study of the book of Esther tonight, but or even Esther itself. We're going to look at the providence of God, and so that's why I put that title at the top. And so we see God's providence in Esther and Mordecai and to God's nation, the Jews. Approximate time is during the reign of King Ahasuerus, 485 B.C. to 465 B.C. And also known, it's in the Greek, same man as Xerxes. But King Ahasuerus, reigned over 127 provinces of the Medo-Persian Empire, and it was all the way from India to Ethiopia, rather large section. And this is still the time when the Jews are in captivity in Babylon. And then, the Persians take over the Babylonians. So let's take a look at the story, and there's the first chapters introduce the characters of the story. We're introduced to King Ahasuerus, and he's hosting a party for all the nobles and the officials in the land. And it goes on for about 180 days. In fact, you open your Bible, you can kind of follow along as I read the story, or you can read it in your notes. But you can kind of fill in blanks, because obviously I'm going to tell about 10 chapters on one page of your notes. So you can read the book itself and fill in the blanks between the parts that I don't tell about. But there's a 180-day party that King Ahasuerus is hosting for all of these nobles and the people in authority. Comes down to the final week of the party. And he's going to have what, I don't know, he calls it a rave or a Mardi Gras kind of style. It's going to just really get wild on the last week. He calls in Queen Vashti to come in and display herself before all of these nobles and princes at the party. Queen Vashti refuses to do that. He wants to show off her beauty. The king is enraged, and so he decides to replace her. So Vashti is placed in exile somewhere. But the law, he issues a law and says she can never come into my presence again. So what's going to happen, it was suggested to King Ahasuerus to have a beauty contest of sorts, sort of a Miss Persian Empire thing, and the winner would be the queen. In chapter 2, Esther is introduced. There's no indication that she wanted to participate in this, but she did. King Ahasuerus sent out all the nobles throughout the land to gather in the prettiest of the ladies. All the women were treated for a solid year. They were given baths and perfumes and clothing and jewels. It was said of Esther that she just was beautiful without all of the adornments. She goes in when it was her time to go in before the king. It says in verse 17 of chapter 2 that he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen. Wow, out of all the ladies that were called into the king's court. But Esther was a Jew, and Jews were not loved by everybody. So Mordecai kept her nationality a secret for a time. See, Esther's parents had died. So Mordecai took her into his house to raise her as his daughter. And at this point, there's a very important incident to remember, especially to remember later in the story. In verses 21, beginning of verse 21, Mordecai, just by, we might say by chance or by providence, he occupied an official position at the king's gate. Remember, this time in history, if you were at the king's gate, that was a pretty official place. That was a place of prominence. That's where a lot of legalities were held. That's where the kind of the speaker's bureau was. If you were at the gate, well, you're pretty important. Well, Mordecai had a position at the gate. Well, while he was there, he overheard a plot against the king. So Mordecai tells Esther, and she tells the king. It's investigated, and these two would-be assassins of the king were put to death. In verse 32, it says it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. I don't forget that. It was written in the Chronicles. In chapter 3, we meet the villain. His name's Haman. He's a descendant of the Amalekites. Well, Haman is promoted to a high position in the court of Ahasuerus. In verse 1, it says he was set over all the princes. And also, it was commanded by the king that everyone should bow down to Haman when he passes by. So Haman is filled with conceit and arrogance. Sure enough, as he passes by, they all bow down and applaud him. Everybody but one person, Mordecai. He doesn't do it. And that sets the stage for the contest between, we'll say, God and the Medes and the Persians. So now we come to the plot in chapter 3, still in chapter 3, in verse 5. Haman sees that Mordecai does not bow down to him, doesn't give him reverence. And Haman's full of wrath. And so in verse 6 it says, therefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, not just Haman. We know that Haman's not going to win because, you know, Romans 8, verse 31, if God is for us, who can be against us? But in verse 8, Haman says to King Ahasuerus, says there's a certain people, it's an interesting phrase, a certain people. Remember, it wasn't told. Mordecai didn't reveal he was a Jew, and Esther didn't reveal she was a Jew. But so, to kind of say it to the king, you know, king, there's a certain people out there scattered abroad, in other words, throughout the land, and their laws are different from yours. And then he said, and they don't keep your laws. Well, what law did Haman have in mind? You guessed it, the one that says everyone's supposed to bow down to Haman. So verse 9, I'll give you a paraphrase. Haman comes into the king. He says, king, I'm kind of worried about you. So let's destroy all of these certain people. Ahasuerus agrees with Haman's plan. Gives Haman his ring, and that stamp that says official decree. Orders Haman to have it written in the book of Chronicles and seals it with his ring. In verse 12, the decree is on the 13th of Adar, that date, all the militia were to execute all the Jews, and that was spread throughout all the land. An upcoming date on the 13th of Adar, the month of Adar. So now we come to chapter 4. The marvelous conversation between Esther and Mordecai. Mordecai informs Esther of Haman's plot. He asks Esther, since she's the queen, to appeal before King Ahasuerus on behalf of the Jews. Well, Esther's afraid, and she's reasoning back and forth with Mordecai in this conversation. The king, it says in the text, hasn't asked me to come into his company for over a month. And not only that, Esther is saying to Mordecai, you know, there's a law that if you appear before him uninvited, it's to invite death, unless he holds out the scepter. She says, I'm not sure he will do that. here's Mordecai's response to Esther, beginning at verse 13. I'll paraphrase it. Mordecai says to Esther, you know, Esther, if the Jews die, Esther, you'll die too. You'll die with them. If you don't intercede for us, Esther, God will save us through another. And after our deliverance, the Jews will recall that you as queen would not lift a finger to help. And then, because you didn't lift a finger to help, all of your house will be destroyed. And then the familiar phrase, and besides all this, who knows but what you are come into the kingdom for such a time as this. Wow. You preach a sermon for a whole month on that one verse. You see, Mordecai was certain that God would deliver his people. If he didn't deliver them through Esther, Mordecai said he will deliver us through another. Didn't know who. But God would deliver us. So kind of pause there for a moment and see, say, how do you see yourself in this congregation? How do you see yourself in the kingdom? You know, in 1 Corinthians 12, verse 18, says God has set the members, every one of them, in the body as it pleased him. And throughout Bible history, God's always raised up people to deliver, to influence, to preach, to save. God's providence. So when Mordecai says, Esther, you don't know whether you come into the kingdom for such a time as this. Well, Esther doesn't rub her head and pour her in cheeks. She doesn't do that. And she doesn't contemplate it. She just says in verse 16, I'll do it. I'll do it. Then she says, have all the Jews fast for me for 3 days. And then after that, I'm going in to the king. He may have me killed. And this part of the answer kind of grips us. She says, and if I perish, I perish. I'll do it. I'll do it. So the Apostle Paul said that too in Philippians 1 verse 20. That Christ in my body, whether by life or by death. For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. Wow. Well, same thing. Paul said, I want Christ to be magnified in my body, whether I die preaching or live preaching. So the story continues. Esther has her audience with the king, still in chapter 4, and here's the end of it. The law says, remember, that the Jews are going to be killed on the 13th of Adar. So Esther, you know, I'm going before the king, hasn't seen me in 30 days. If he doesn't extend the scepter, I'm going to be killed. Chapter 5. Here it goes. So Esther put on her royal robes, went into the king, and the king extends the scepter. Lucky or providence? Again. And there's still more to come. In verse 3, the king says to her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? Well, in other words, what's your request? And it'll be given you up to half the kingdom. Uh-oh. Husbands, you ever said that to your wife? Anything you want, dear. Up to half. Of course, in California, they're going to get half anyway. But I'll give you half the kingdom. So Esther said, I've prepared a banquet for you today, dear king, in so many words. And I want you and Haman to come and dine with me. And now I will tell you what my request is at the banquet. Of course, the king's delighted. He likes parties. There's about a dozen of them in the book of Esther. So the party's arranged for just three of them. Kind of an intimate party. The king and Esther and Haman. Three people. Verses 6 through 8. Chapter 5, for whatever reason, Esther decides not to approach King Ahasuerus at that party. But she makes the request now is, will you come to a second banquet tomorrow? And it's granted. Okay, we'll do this again tomorrow. And the party breaks up. Wisdom or providence? In verse 9, Haman leaves this party with a glad heart, the verse says, in together. And his wife Zeresh, now we're going to remember her later too, as part of the providence. And so they're there, and Haman sings a few lines of, you know, how great I am. Probably recounts his wealth and glory. Tells them about the party. I just had a party with the king and the queen. Just the three of us. And besides that, in verse 12, it says, I'm invited again tomorrow. But then in verse 13, his teeth get clenched. And he says, but yet in all this, it avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Well, sweet and gentle Zeresh, his wife, has a solution. Why don't you build a gallows 75 feet high and hang Mordecai on it, and when you go see the king, get his permission to do it. Talk about callous. You think Zeresh would have said, why don't you write Mordecai a sweet note and express your feelings? But Zeresh doesn't do that. Build a gallows and hang the guy. So, and talk about callous. So it says in verse 14, the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. Chapter 6. Here's the core. The providence of God is seen in every incident. Verse 1. On that night, the king could not sleep. Lucky. A providence. Verse 2, he felt like reading. More luck. A providence. And then you know what he reads? Not the Sports Illustrated or the National Geographic. He said he commanded to bring the book of records of the Chronicles. Bring me the Chronicles of the King. And the very one he is reading from told of the time that Mordecai revealed the plot against him. Lucky for Providence. And so after reading that this man Mordecai has saved his life, he says in verse 3, what honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai for this thing? Nothing. Nothing. At that moment, Haman walks in. He couldn't sleep either. Probably thinking about Mordecai. In verse 4, the king shouts out, who's there? Said it's Haman. Oh, what timing. Lucky. For providence. Verse 6, he says, come in, Haman. I have a question for you. What shall be done to the man the king delights to honor? The verse says, Haman thought in his heart, so whom would the king delight to honor more than me? I'm second in command. In verse 8 and 9, Haman answers, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, he says, yeah, I don't know, dear king. I can't imagine who you mean, but why don't you dress this fellow up in the king's robes, put the king's crown on him, that would be a good idea, and set him on the king's horse, oh yeah, and have a prince lead him through the streets, shouting his honor among the people. Why don't we do that to the one that you choose to honor? Verse 10, the king says, great idea. You go do that to Mordecai. You do that to Mordecai. Don't you wish you could have been there? The king now loads Haman up with all of this stuff and points him to Mordecai's house. Can you picture Haman knocking on Mordecai's door? Got something for you, Mordecai. Here, put this on. Here, let me give you a lift under the saddle of the horse. Picture him leading Mordecai through the streets, saying, hail, Mordecai, the man the king delights in honoring. And it happened. And after Haman did that in verse 12, then Haman went in haste to his house, mourning, head covered. And then there's more. While he's telling his wife the situation, there's a knock at the door. In verse 14, closing of the chapter, the herald at the door says, the banquet is ready. Oh, that's right. Forgot about the party. This is the second day. It's the tomorrow. I get to go to another banquet. You know, yesterday, that's all he could talk about. Now chapter 7. Haman's at the second banquet. Prepared for Haman, the king, and the queen. The king now asks Esther, what's your request? And Esther gets right to the point. In verse 3, oh my king, spare my life. Someone is trying to kill me. The king says, who is he? You picture Haman hearing that? Uh-oh. Esther points her finger at Haman, and in verse 6, she says, the adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman. Wow. Verse 7, the king is in a rage. He goes out to the garden to think about the situation. What am I going to do? While he's gone, Haman begins to plead his case to Esther and falls on the couch where Esther is. At that moment, the king comes back in, and you know what he's thinking. In verse 8, says, will he force the queen also before me in my house? Haman just pleading his cause to the queen, who trips and falls over on the couch where she is. King sees it. Says, oh. So in verse 10, so they hang Haman on the gallows that he prepared for Mordecai. And then the king's wrath was pacified. But oh, there's still more. We forgot about the war against the Jews. Verse 8, here's where the good stuff happens too. Verse 2, Mordecai is promoted to second in command. He takes over Haman's position. But there's a problem, remember? It's been written in the law of the Medes and the Persians that the Jews, this certain people, are going to be destroyed on the 13th of Adar. In verse 8, Esther, in talking to the king Ahasuerus, says, you know, the law no man can reverse. But the king told Esther, take my ring and write anything you please in the law. So he's going to add to it. Kind of amendment. So Mordecai had it, being giving Esther some wise counsel, had it added that the Jews were to prepare themselves against that day, arm themselves, and fight. The news spread quickly. Fear of the Jews now turns to hope. And in verse 17 it says that many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. In other words, the people of the land, when it says that they became Jews because of the fear of the Jews that fell upon them, meaning, wait a minute, these are God's people. It looks like they're going to win. I'm joining the winning team. The people of the land had an awesome fear and respect for God of the Jews, and they say, we are joining your side. That's what that phrase means when it says they feared the Jews. They weren't fearing the Jews that were going to kill them. These are the people of the land that said, we're going to be on your side. I want to be on that team. Maybe the day will come when God's people today become so strong and influential that the people flock to us. Maybe it'll be a time of distress or whatever. The people will really come our direction like these people did toward Esther and Mordecai. So now chapter 9, here's the closing. 13th of Adar arrives. The Jews defended themselves and the disaster was averted. In verse 5, the Jews smote all their enemies. In verse 10, they hanged Haman's 10 sons. In verse 26, here's the celebration. Wherefore they call these days Purim, even today. Celebration. When the Jews celebrate that feast of Purim, it's a celebration of this deliverance in the story of Esther. Then it says in verse 28, these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, that these 2 days should not fail from among the Jews, nor the memorial. And in verse 32 was written in the book. Chapter 10, very short chapter, it says again that Mordecai's greatness is written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings and Medes and the Persians. So the lesson is for the providence today. When Jesus gave the Great Commission, after he told him to go to all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, he said, "Lo, I'm with you. I'm with you always, even to the end of the age." We can see the providence moving among God's people. In Acts 8, God arranged a meeting between Philip and the Ethiopian. In chapter 9 of the book of Acts, heaven gets Saul and Ananias together. In chapter 10, Peter makes contact with Cornelius. In Acts chapter 16, Paul makes contact with the Macedonians. See, God can still work in your life and mine. In 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, he gives the promise that we'll not be tempted above that which we're able. Providence of God. In Matthew 6, verse 33, he says, "Seek the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." The providence of God in your life and mine when we stand on his side. In Romans 8, verse 28, all things work together for good. And those that love the Lord are called according to his purpose. Now, good things can arise from situations and circumstances in life. In Psalm 34, verse 22, it says, "The Lord redeems the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust him shall be desolate." See, this may be the time for you to come into the kingdom. Work in the kingdom. Whatever it is. Providence. I remember I'm not supposed to tell Christine stories. I remember when I'll need a ride home.
You're going to go home.
After the way you talked to Chris, I don't think so.
And golly, she said one day, "Tell me, I'm praying that I need a Christian man to marry." We got together. So I kind of think of myself as answered prayer. I'm answered prayer. Providence brought us. So plain God. Always when we assemble for worship, you know how providence is going to work. It's just always good to get together, but always at the end of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, a song of invitation. If you're not a member of the New Testament church, meaning you're not a Christian, you've not been baptized for remission of sins, we can accomplish that. You simply have to let your request be known. Go and ask brethren for strength, encouragement. Just ask for prayers for whatever is taking place in your life, and we can certainly honor that request. Just need to let your request be known. So we sing this song of encouragement, song of invitation, song of exhortation. If you need to respond in a public way when we're gathered here, just simply come and have a seat beside me, and just let your request be known at the end of the song. So let's stand together, sing the song of intercession.